game group today. I am Rupokadam, I am Dhati Shapadantika. Little higher, little higher, little higher. That's about right. Certain steps you've taken, what steps you should take next. More, more, more. That looks good.
Can
we
have mobile check?
Silent? Yeah, mobile check. We've all got mobiles.
If we could probably take half an hour or something, maybe 15 minutes for questions.
Yeah, do it the opposite way.
Okay, which way will manage?
Thank you. The beginning is already there to have some interest. Ado Shraddha. Shraddha means faith, tentative faith, or Srila Prabhupada sometimes translated it interest. Faith that, well, all right, let me hear him out, let's see what he's got to say. That there might be something here. Or there has to be some higher truth, there's got to be more to life than attending classes and then getting a job and then getting married and having kids and dying. There has to be something more than that. So some initial faith or interest, there must be some higher purpose. And then the next thing is sadhu sangha. Then let me associate or seek out the company of devotees. Sadhu sangha. If I want to learn about mathematics, I should associate with mathematicians or people who are using math. If I want to learn about medicine, then I should associate with doctors or medical people. If I want to learn how to rob a bank, I should associate with thieves. Association is so important. One time Srila Prabhupada said that whatever progress you've made, it's 90% by association. It's good, I already did it. Thank you. Sadhu Sangha. The Chaitanya Charitamrita said, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastra Koye, Lava Mantra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Koye. So all the Shastras, all the Vedic literature is calling out, get Sadhu Sangha, get Sadhu Sangha, get Sadhu Sangha. Lava Mantra, by even a fraction of a moment's association with an advanced devotee of Krishna, one can attain all perfection. So we should try to get the association of devotees. Different kinds of devotees, devotees who are on the same level as us, their company will help us. And those who are more advanced than us, their company will also help us still more. And even the company of those who are less advanced, because whatever we've learned, we can give to them. That's also good for them and good for us. So we should seek out the company of devotees, especially advanced devotees. And then, bhajana kriya, which should take up the practices of Krishna consciousness. There are so many chanting Hare Krishna, to rise early in the morning, chant Hare Krishna, read the books about Krishna consciousness, and do so many things, Virtilak. So many things that will help us in the practice. And this one should do especially under the guidance of an advanced devotee or a bona fide spiritual master. That's the next stage. And then the next stage will be anartha nivritti. Anartha means the unwanted things, artha, or that which has no value. In other words, junk. Anartha, the unwanted things, junk within the heart, of which there's an awful lot. If we could hold a sale selling all the junk in our heart, we'd all be millionaires. Anartha nivritti. So getting free from all of that. Prabhupada described Krishna consciousness as a gradual cleansing process. Chaito dharpana marjanam. Cleansing the heart. So that these unwanted things in the heart, unwanted things means lust, anger, greed, kamkrodha, madness, it's there. Foolishness, moha, illusion, envy, all the unwanted things. Those are the broad categories. So much unwanted stuff can be gradually cleansed from the heart. Or in the Bhagavatam it says that one gets freed from... I have a different idea. Can this be raised this way? Yes, it can. Since the other way isn't helping as much. You want to just turn that clockwise?
Yeah.
The Tarara Rajastamo Bhava. There are three modes of nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And all these unwanted things in the heart are especially associated with ignorance and passion. So by chanting Hare Krishna, by associating with devotees, by practicing, then we want to rise above ignorance, rise above passion, and come to the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, one will feel peaceful, one will feel happy, prasanna manasa. Mind will become happy. In ignorance, the mind is always miserable. The mind feels miserable, bored, crazy. Intoxicated mind is in the mode of ignorance. In the mode of passion, so many desires, this, that. The mode of goodness, one becomes purified, one becomes happy within, one becomes happy-minded. And from that stage, one makes further progress in bhakti yoga. So, anartha nivritti syat, then one comes to the stage of strong conviction, nishtha. One becomes strongly convinced. In the beginning, let's check it out. Maybe there's something there. Seems like people are getting something from it. Let me see what's there. I think there's something. Maybe. Little faith, little interest. Nishtha means now I've, by practical experience, I see, yes, there's something very sublime, something true. If you move that, move this, and of course it can't move to exactly where you want. Anyway, that's a little better. I've got a better idea. Most of the microphone stands in ISKCON are junk because they're all misused. This is good. So by practical experience and by thoughtful consideration, thinking about the matter, thinking about the matter, by becoming purified in heart, one becomes convinced, yes, this is right, nishtha. And whatever arguments you give, in the beginning stage, somebody gives an argument, but in this advanced stage, somebody gives an argument, you say, you don't know what you're talking about. And then you have all the counter-arguments. Nishtha, you're convinced. And then one gets a strong taste, an actual taste for Krishna consciousness, strong taste. And then, gradually, further progress, one becomes attached, one develops attached means attached to Krishna. One develops ecstasy in Krishna consciousness. And perfection, one comes to pure love for Krishna. That means life is completely successful. So these are the stages, step by step. Maybe some of the guys want to move forward a little bit. There'll be more room. These are the stages that one goes through, one after another. And we may be in the beginning stages, but by... Nice, everyone's donating all these phones. By practicing, krame, one step after another, we'll make progress. Srila Rupa Goswami says with enthusiasm and patience, determination, by following the various principles and the association of devotees, we'll make progress. And maybe that's my opening statement, and we'll see what kind of questions you might have.
Questions, anybody? Maharaj, when we know someone's showing interest, how do we say if we've been here in this town for a long time?
Someone's been showing interest.
Yeah, a new person.
New person.
And how do we reciprocate?
Like, how do we reciprocate?
Do we do an aggressive, name him down and say you're wrong, what are you doing, come here, or slowly?
Do we beat him over the head and drag him in? If it'll work, great. It'll be for his benefit, you know. Beat him up, put him in a bag, drag him in. But people have free will, and that approach may not be so effective. You drag them in, and they say, I'm never going to go there again. They beat me up. So, rather than coercion, attraction. We have so much that's attractive. Krishna is all attractive through his philosophy, through his form, through his name, through his quality. So many things about Krishna are attractive. You're looking for philosophy, so much philosophy is there. You're looking for nice food is there. You're looking for experience in transcendental life, you'll have so much experience. You're looking for freedom from anxiety. Yes, come. You're looking for nice music. We have the best music. In so many ways, to attract people by their intelligence, by their senses even. To give people, practically it's exposure. As people become exposed to Krishna in a nice way, they have the opportunity to become attracted. Sometimes it's the other way. Sometimes it's by smashing their illusions. Maybe they're attracted to Krishna or could potentially be attracted, but they're so bewildered that they can't get it. Sometimes also we may speak in such a way as to try to free them from their illusions. That may not be exactly attractive. Maybe they were hoping to hold on to their illusions. But that's sometimes helpful also. And to show them that what you're attracted, what you're attached to is nothing. Or it's negative. You're attached to something that's making you miserable. Or will make you miserable. So that's two ways. By attraction and repulsion. To share with them the attractive features of Krishna. And to give them the opportunity to be repulsed by Maya. Is that okay? And the details of how you do that, that's up to your own intelligence and according to the person and his interests. We meet people and we find out what they're interested in, what makes them tick. And then we look for the opportunity how to bring them to Krishna. Through the literature, certainly, give people the opportunity to read transcendental literature, give them the opportunity to chant Hare Krishna, to take part in wonderful festivals, and so on. Okay. Yes?
What do we do when, like, a lot of us who are having or chanting about, like, in the night, sometimes in the rounds, remaining?
I can't hear you. Some of you are chanting your rounds, and...
Yeah, in the night, and we have rounds remaining, and you also have to do the reading. So, if, like, sometimes it comes to me that should I read or should I chant?
Should you read or should you chant? Because you still, it comes to the evening and you have rounds remaining. Best policy is to chant those rounds early in the day. There's really nothing that beats the early morning. Once the day gets going, it's hard to focus on these nice things. To read, to chant, in the midst of everything that's going on, can become difficult. So many demands are put upon us, so many things pull us in. But in the morning time, before things take off, that's when chanting rounds, reading, so much of that kind of spiritual activity can be, number one, very effective, and number two, completed. So, one of the secrets that we learn in Krishna consciousness is to take advantage of those early morning hours. If you're getting up at 6, there's 5, there's 4, there's 3. Some of my godbrothers get up at 1 and chant and write and read. So you may not be in the 1 o'clock crowd, but if you look for the opportunity to use that morning time, it's really great. Apart from that, if you didn't complete everything you wanted to complete in the morning, then you have decisions to make, either read, chant. But if you've taken a vow to chant so many rounds in a day, then try to complete that. Don't be one day yes and the next day no. If you've determined I'm going to do this many, then do that. But then, of course, you've determined, I'm going to read this much every day. So whatever you've determined to do, try to do that. Okay. Time management. Yes?
Maharaj, what about people who are ignorant? For example,
most of the people in the world. Yes.
Yeah. 2 points. But my question is a little more detailed than that. It's like someone comes and approaches and they're showing interest in Krishna consciousness, but their belief or they believe, or they're one-minded, you can say they're narrow-minded, saying that Krishna consciousness is just promoting Krishna and demoting everything else. So what do we do in those cases? How do
we tell them they're right? Now, what is it that you want to promote as being as good as Krishna? You're right. Your criticism is that we're just promoting Krishna, we're demoting everything else, and you're quite right. Now, what is it that you want to promote as being better than Krishna? Bring forth your candidate for something better.
Let's say now we all are, we are in Krishna consciousness now, but there is this saying that slow and steady wins the race.
Mm.
But then with a bomb ticking around called death, how slow should we take Krishna consciousness?
Well, fast and steady is also good. Main thing is steady. We don't have to think, well, I'm going too fast. Too fast means if I'm doing something artificial, I may say, well, I'm only going to eat 5 chickpeas a day, and that's it. That may be all right for Raghunath Das Goswami, but I'm not Raghunath Das Goswami. So one of the regular principles is, in essence, not to bite off more than we can chew, not to try to do something extraordinary, which we're not going to be able to sustain. Our gain should be sustainable. I can go on chanting every day, I can go on reading every day, I can follow these principles every day. So, that we should do. You don't have to worry, I'm going too fast. Process is supposed to be to act quickly, or to be quickly effective. Then we should see that we're not neglecting things that shouldn't be neglected. Of course we can neglect everything for Krishna, but do everything sanely, do everything intelligently. But knowing nothing is more important than Krishna consciousness. Not my money, not my career, not my my family. We'll all be finished. But Krishna consciousness is eternal. So it's not therefore that, therefore I'll throw away all money, I'll have no career, and so on. But a sense of priorities, that nothing is more important than my eternal relationship with Krishna.
In the Nectar of Instruction, Suprapad, in the preface, he says that one needs to come to the position of Sattva Guna first.
A position of?
Sattva Guna.
Of Satrugna.
Sattva
Guna.
Yeah, Sattva Guna. And therefore, in Dubai, how do we come to such a position?
Dubai or anywhere?
Because we have our school and such things, which is very much putting us in lower modes.
Mm.
And is there any way to get back out of it when you come back home, or is there any way to stay in Sattva Guna throughout?
Mm. Yeah, so much of the environment is promoting passion and ignorance and even actively trying to suck us in to a way of life that's filled with passion and ignorance. So therefore these activities of sadhana, of regular spiritual, daily spiritual activity, are meant to keep us afloat, keep us above the lower modes. And these regulative principles, no gambling, no intoxication, no meat eating, no illicit sex, these are meant to keep us above passion and ignorance. Intoxication means ignorance. Gambling, again, passion and ignorance. The illicit sex, passion and ignorance. Meat eating, passion and ignorance. So, practically, Prabhupada said that by following these four regular principles, one is practically liberated. Mm. All of Dubai, the entire economy depends on breaking these four regular principles. So if we follow these principles, then we rise above the mundane economy. We rise above the environment of passion and ignorance, and we live in the world of goodness. By following these regulative principles, by chanting Hare Krishna, by spiritual association. Tonight, so many people might be out doing something, whatever they do out there. But you've chosen to come here and chant Hare Krishna and hear something about Krishna associated with devotees. So by one activity, passion and ignorance, or degradation, and by another activity, upliftment.
And the follow up, the question is, but when we see from description of Satyavana, we see that one is not, does not get too angry and he remains usually calm, he does not get affected by distress or this. We see that even if we are doing our basic sadhana and we are still following the four regular principles, we still get moved by different things. So then, how is that similar to Satyavana?
Yeah. Of course. Sometimes even anger can be within the transcendental realm. When the Mayavadis are speaking their rubbish, we get angry. Prabhupada sometimes would be angry with them. They're speaking all rubbish and Prabhupada would get angry. There's space for that on the transcendental platform. But on the non-transcendental platform, we're practicing, but still we sometimes become angry, sometimes become lusty, sometimes become greedy, sometimes become envious. That means we're practicing. So Rupa Goswami says, continue. And that stage will come when we'll be freed from these things. We look forward to that. That's anartha nivritti. Again, it's a gradual process, not that one day I wake up, I got it, anartha nivritti. But gradually, sometimes I've heard the example given that you're flying in a plane and you don't realize how you've gone. You're to like 30,000 feet. Then you look down and sometimes we don't realize how much we make progress in Krishna consciousness. We think that we're just kind of like plodding along, but then sometimes you look around you and you see, my goodness, where I was and where I am. Such a difference. Then okay?
Girls?
Yes?
Maharaj, I'd like to ask you, since as we are all progressing in Krishna consciousness, what should be the position of Shiksha Guru in our life?
What should be the position of Shiksha Guru? Of course, Shiksha means instructions or spiritual guidance. So we should always look for that. It's not that I'll be initiated and then that sort of closes the door. I don't get instructions from anyone now but my Guru. But those who are supporting the same principles as my Guru, those who are teaching the same conclusions as my Guru, those who are capable, can help me follow the instructions or realize the meaning of what I'm getting from my initiating Guru. Initiating gurus is one. We don't get initiated 17 times. But there can be many gurus who instruct us. So we can take benefit. Parents may serve as gurus. Other senior devotees may serve as gurus. In so many ways. Sometimes Prabhupada even said that he accepted his disciples as his gurus. Śrīla Bhakti-siddhānta Saraswati was his. Because we see how the junior devotees are practicing, we think, oh nice, I should be so serious. how much enthusiasm, how much determination. So sometimes even those who are supposedly junior, we look and we see, oh, they're so nice. I should catch this. Yes.
Is going back home always a struggle?
When I look at devotees
like Guru Kula or
Haridas Thakur, they had to go through. Haridas Thakur had to go through. Practically everybody goes through struggle. Going back home is a struggle, and staying here is a struggle. So you might as well go back home. Staying here is more of a struggle. And staying here is an eternal struggle, lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes of struggle in 8,400,000 different species of life. So one lifetime, or even several lifetimes of struggle to go back to Godhead is worth it, to put an end to the struggle. Is that okay? But it must be a struggle. It's not just going to be that everything automatically goes in my direction. Sometimes there must be some challenge, some difficulty. Even anyone, successful businessman, even if they're very good and things are kind of, everything goes their way, still there has to be some struggle someplace in the process. Or anything in one's life. Any person's life, you look at it, there must be struggle somewhere. But their struggle is for nothing. They struggle to make money, and then death comes and their money's wiped out. Or a change of circumstances come, their money's all lost. Or whatever else it is that they're struggling for, they struggle to get a good position, good job, and then they get it, and then they lose it. Or then they get it, and then they find out how much trouble it is to have. Now everyone's envious of them. Anything. Life means there must be some struggle. But if we struggle for the right cause, then we get something sublime. And if we struggle for nothing, we get nothing.
But sometimes we see this in the youth. They tell us they're trying to preach to their friends. And the association actually manages to pull them down. Or they say they're preaching on Facebook, or they're associating it seems that... So what do they do? How do they say it?
Well, we're preaching to our friends, or we're preaching on Facebook, and sort of doesn't, instead of our becoming successful, we get discouraged, or maybe they start preaching to us. And it's a question of learning what's effective. Where in business we have a cost-benefit analysis. We can... How much energy is this worth? What kind of return will there be on my investment? I may, just like in drilling for oil, they know there's oil in this place, but how much energy will it take me to get it? If it's not too hard, then I'll drill for the oil, I'll turn a profit. But there comes a point where the oil is so deep down under there, or there are so many obstacles in the way, or this or that, that I could still get the oil, but getting the oil would cost me more than I'd get by selling it. So then I say it's not worth it. I'll go someplace where the oil is easier to get. So, in trying to bring others to Krishna consciousness, the same principle holds, that sometimes there's someone I'd like to have become Krishna conscious, but trying to bring this person in is like not worth it. He's so, we find that, that he's convinced of some particular way of life, and trying to unconvince him is just not worth it. Let him find out later that it didn't work. Then we'll come back and talk to him again. Or meanwhile, we'll go on to the some other person who's more receptive, more interested. My godbrother Vaisheshika Prabhu speaks of low-hanging fruits. When the fruits are hanging low, you can grab them or jump up a little bit and grab them. When the fruits are way up at the top of the tree, you could still potentially get them. But it's better just to go onto another tree where the fruits are hanging lower. Is that okay?
Mm. All right, but sometimes it becomes that the person who's trying to preach is himself shut down. Specifically trying to preach to their peers. They start to party with them. They say, Prabhu, we're preaching to them.
Well, that's a different thing. They're doing all nasty things, and we're going to go there because I want to preach to them. That means we're fooling ourselves. We should be able to judge our strength also. Prabhupada sometimes said that spreading Krishna consciousness, one, you know, the art is to catch the fish and not get it wet. So if we're going to get wet, then better to back off. We can't just give up on our peers. There's always Maya. There's always Maya. Wherever we go, there's some risk. There's some potential attraction. There's some person who may try to pull me in instead of my pulling him. He's going to try to pull me. There's some risk. So we take some risk. Otherwise, we remain timid and afraid and unadventurous, and what will we accomplish? So some risk is there, but if we see that, again, this cost-benefit, the risk is so great in some circumstance, you know, maybe I'll go to a brothel to make the prostitutes pure devotees. But that's a high-risk proposition. That's a high-risk proposition. I'll try to attract them, but they'll try to attract me. So we may not go beyond our strength. We may know that this is too much risk. For this, I'll lose everything. So with our friends also, we see that, yes, in this circumstance, sometimes also there's a question of favorable ground. They want us to come to a party and we think, well, I can go there and I can preach to them. But in fact, there's not going to be any such opportunity. But we're having a festival and we could try to get them to come. Then we know that we're going to be on strong ground. We'll be in a favorable environment, good territory. So then we say, well, let's try for that. And you become experienced also, where you find out pretty quickly where there's not going to be much happening in the way of actually spreading Krishna consciousness, but there'll be a lot happening in terms of Maya trying to pull me out. And then we learn. Especially we try to avoid circumstances in which sinful activities will be prominent. What do we give more priority to, reading or kirtan? That depends on who you are. Some people, you know, just kirtan. Kirtan is the main thing for them. And they'll sometimes read, but they just love kirtan. And some people, they really love to read. And they like kirtan also, but they just love to read. So some people it's 60-40, some people it's 40-60, some people it's some other proportion. In an ultimate sense, it doesn't matter. As long as I'm attracted to Krishna and engaged in Krishna consciousness, then let me do what I like. Someone likes to read more, someone likes to chant more, someone likes to worship the deity more, someone likes to preach more.
But if sometimes they just only repeat and not reading, they might get to...
That's not so good. If there's no reading, we should try to read. Some of us will just love to read on and on. Those of us who are not so enthusiastic, at least we should try to read something, attend the classes, something, reading, so that it doesn't become just sentimental. There's a science here, and it's good for us to know the principles of that science. Someone's more enthusiastic for reading, someone's less enthusiastic. Something should be there.
How do you measure your progress in Krishna consciousness?
How do you measure your progress in Krishna consciousness? By how much you're becoming detached from Maya. Just there, those who they appear to be very advanced in Krishna consciousness, but you see they're still materially attached like crazy. Sometimes we go to Vrindavan and we see there are people that are like so advanced and they're just fully in love with Krishna, but they're keeping a woman on the side and they've got implicit connections. After their talk with them about how all the nectar of Krishna consciousness, and you see them 10 minutes later, they're smoking a cigarette, and maybe it's not tobacco. So then that's our yardstick. We see that, the detachment is not gone. Krishna, Bhaktir Parasyam Bhavo Viraktir Anyasprasha. If someone is becoming attached to Krishna, then correspondingly, they'll become detached from Maya. So we can see how I'm developing detachment. After some time we see, I used to go to these parties, or I used to listen to this music, or I used to think this was the greatest thing, that was the greatest thing. Now it's like a kid's old toys, I'm not interested anymore. That's a sign you're making progress.
At times when you don't have, like, say, music, so you get back again to Krishna consciousness. Like, at times when you don't have a source of entertainment for your senses, you just get back to Krishna consciousness again. At times this happens with many of us. So do you think just getting back into Krishna consciousness when you don't have some mean of entertainment, will you progress?
Yeah. If you find that that material life is boring, that's good. If you just come to Krishna consciousness because material life is boring, that's good. If you come to...
Maharaj, you meant that your second option is Krishna consciousness. You have nothing to do at all.
We need...
Even that's good. I mean, there's nothing to do at all means you rejected the... There's always something to do. In Maya. Maya always has something to do. She's always got something on offer. But when you look at it and you say, nah, I'd rather, if that's all there is, I'd rather be chant Hare Krishna. That's a sign that you've made advancement. If all they're offering me is kind of a lousy party with some nasty food, then forget it, I'll just go join the devotees. And that's a sign you're becoming advanced. Haridas Thakur, what was Maya offering him? Here, I'm a beautiful young woman, and I'm ready to die for you. You're so young, you're so handsome, and it's the middle of the night, and here we are in your little cottage in the woods. Haridas Thakur said, yeah, good. Just let me finish my rounds and we can have some fun. And she became a devotee. But we may not try that. But when we think that, Just like here in Dubai, they invent all of this stuff for happiness. That you come on the airplane and you see all the stuff that they've invented. Now they've invented, you can see 65,000 creatures swimming in their new aquarium. You can go to the desert and, ooh, the desert. You can eat at all these restaurants and you can spend the day on this island or that island. You can do this, you can do that. They've invented all of this stuff to attract people. And probably for most of the people who live in Dubai, that stuff's not very interesting. They don't really care about it, but it attracts people to come from elsewhere. But then there are things that attract those who live here also. So there's so many attractions are basically concoctions. Whether they're a business deal kind of concoction or it's just Maya's put something together to attract us. It's a mental concoction. I'm thinking I'm going to enjoy. The actual story is I'm not going to enjoy. But I'm thinking I'm going to enjoy. But as one wakes up in Krishna consciousness, one gets it. One sees, what is this aquarium? A batch of fish, swimming here and there. What is this desert? A batch of sand and hot wind. Camels. What is it to watch some cars going zoom 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 zoom? And then for the things that attract us after a while, is what is there to that? That's a sign that one's becoming attracted to Krishna. The more one becomes attracted to Krishna, the less attractive Maya seems.
What if you advance in Krishna consciousness and you know you're not attached to Maya, but don't you think that proudness again can take you down?
You're making advancement in Krishna consciousness, you're not attached to Maya, but don't I think that
pride can take you down again?
Yeah, pride, what do they say in the Bible? Pride goeth before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advises that we should be very humble to chant Hare Krishna. I'm not attached to this, I'm not attached to that, I'm not attached to this, I'm not attached to this. You're attached to how great you think you are because you've given all this stuff ahead of you. So we should be careful. We should be.
What's one quick way to get rid of pride, or what is a complete?
What's one quick way to get rid of pride? Well, there are different ways. One is to remember this instruction. Kaviraj Goswami recommends that we make like a necklace of this instruction, Trinadapi Suni Chaina, and wear it around our neck for constant remembrance. It doesn't mean go to the store and have them carve a necklace, but it means to think about it. Like, wait a second, I'm getting proud here. What about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction? And that will help us. Or we can associate with those who are more advanced. If I only associate with those who are on my own level or less advanced, then I think I'm hot stuff. But if I associate with those who are more advanced, then I'll think, I wish I could be like that. Always, that's a benefit of association with advanced devotees. Or we can read in the books about the advanced devotees, what the actual position is, and then we can think, am I like that? Honesty, helpful, honest assessment.
Srila Prabhupada says that two kind of association.
Excuse me, one more thing. Try to bring people to Krishna consciousness. your ego will get smashed. Because it's not always so easy. That's another advantage. They may or may not become Krishna conscious, but by the attempt, I'll become Krishna. Yes?
Srila Prabhupada says there are two kinds of association. One is devotee association and one is the scriptures. Which is better?
Which is better, the devotee association or association of scriptures? Devotee association is better because when we associate with devotees, we'll get scriptural association also. Devotees will come and say, come on, let's read something. Or, hey, do you remember this verse? Or the devotee association will be actively going after us.
Maharaj, you said if you get a person...
But association of devotees means in relationship with Krishna. That's real devotional association. It's not that get into material life in the association of devotees. You know, we share our weaknesses and indulge in them together. That's not...
Association of only advanced devotees?
No, not only advanced devotees. Devotees. If they're more advanced, then we'll be submissive and hear from them and serve them. If they're on the same level, then we'll make friends with them. And in their association, we'll chant, we'll hear, we'll read. And if they're less advanced, we'll try to benefit them. Prabhupada was associating with devotees that he made and out of hippies and strange people in New York City. Even that association was enlivening for him because he gave him the opportunity to speak about Krishna. Yes?
Maharaj, since we're in this material world, there's definitely opportunities of, as you said, lust, greed, but most of the time I've encountered personally is that anger is what frustration, anger, disappointment.
Yeah, anger is harder even than lust.
Yes, exactly. So what is a safe way to try to exert that anger? Because from a psychological point of view, the more you keep in, it's like a ticking time bomb. Eventually, you'll just burst out with all that anger. So what could be a safe way to exert the anger in a way that you're not harming anyone else or you're not putting them down or in any of that point of view? So that is like one of my...
Yes, the Hanuman, he burned Lanka, he became so angry.
I don't have that option.
I don't
have
that option. No, that one's already taken. We may sometimes become angry at the demons. Sometimes, like Prabhupada would be so angry at the scientists and Mayavadis and so many rascals, and Prabhupada would write about them very strongly. Not that the only way to express anger is to punch someone out. But there's a kind of anger there. These people are misleading the world. They're cheating everyone. And then Prabhupada would, through writing, he would smash them. Real smashing. He'd let him have it. And that's one way. Sometimes by opposing them in debate, although losing one's cool is not usually the best way to win a debate. One tip Prabhupada gave for dealing with anger, he told one devotee that when you become angry, you can think of Lord Nrisimhadev. He's unlimitedly angry. Is that okay? Stop here. Another question. Yes.
If there is a situation where we have to select, in this material world we all have to do some work, karma. If there is a situation we have to select between doing our karma and doing, like, following the path of bhakti, karma and bhakti, how do we...
Karma and bhakti.
What is to be given the priority, or how do we create a balance?
Bhakti should always be given the priority. But karma means activity or prescribed duties. A prescribed duty doesn't have to be outside of bhakti. Yat karoshi, Krishna says, whatever you do, do for me. Arjuna is fighting. That's karma. And in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, he's arguing that this is ugra karma, nasty karma. I don't want to do this. I want to be a sadhu. Krishna said, what nonsense, sadhu, do your job. But do it in Krishna consciousness. So, of course, activities that are nasty, that are contrary to dharma, we should avoid. Not that as a matter of, we should avoid professions or professional activity where we have to be involved in sinful life. Not, well, it's my job. We should try to avoid that. But activity you can't avoid. Krishna says, not even for a moment can you avoid acting. But yoga karma sukoshama, one should learn the art of acting in such a way that I'm always acting in relationship to Krishna. I'm connecting my activities with Krishna. Elsewhere, Krishna says, Padma Patram Vibhavasa, like the lotus flower that's on the water. It's a lotus flower, so it has to be in the water. But that doesn't mean it has to get wet. It floats on the top. Now that's the art of working. Okay? Thank you all very much. Hare
Krishna.
Jai Prabhupada ki jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Pranande.